Hi, I'm Sharad Kutan, and welcome to Let's Talk, the show that gives you the most important conversations of the day. Today, we look at the impact and the effectiveness of what has been called the war on drugs. This comes on the heels of a statement made by the Minister of Law that drug use needs to be understood as a health issue and managed by the health sector rather than by the criminal justice system. That's an amazing statement to make. It seems to put the government in step with the global conversation on decriminalization of substance abuse, the legalization of marijuana or cannabis rather for medical use, and also more holistic and a complex approach to the question of drug abuse. All these issues, of course, anchors on the word dada, or drugs as we used to call them. I'm very fortunate to have in the studio with me Intan Mustika Putri Mokhtar, or Yuki as we call her, president of Malaysia Society of Awareness, also Samantha Chong, a former deputy public prosecutor, advocate and solicitor, and Dr. Rusti Abdul Rashid, director of University of Malaya's Center for Addiction Science Studies. And you're a psychiatrist by training, right? So thank you again, all of you, for being here. Can I begin with you, Yuki? I mean, you're the president of this Malaysia Society for Awareness. When people talk about drugs, when Malaysians talk about drugs, or dada, what is the image they have in their mind?
In their mind is, of course, in a chemical substance, you know, how bad it is, how it's going to affect your mind, you know. But then what we are trying to make people aware of is that cannabis is a herb. It should be treated like a herb. And if you use it wisely, it can help in to manage your health. So this is what we're trying to get people to be aware of, that, you know, yes, you do have a few other drugs out there, but we need to reclassify cannabis back.
Okay. And classification goes to the heart of it. How do we classify? Everything comes under the idea of drugs, which are bad. And then there are all kinds of good drugs we call medicine, and then there are things that are perhaps like drugs, but we don't even think of them as drugs, like alcohol and nicotine and caffeine and so on and so forth. Samantha, your own journey as a lawyer, right? I mean, why is it that you're interested in the question of drug use, drug abuse, drug law policy?
Because as a former prosecutor and a criminal law practitioner, I always see the same person coming in and out the courts and prisons. So when I was a prosecutor in a district court in PJ, I've witnessed myself a young boy in courts for children. He began with small amount of drug use, and then slowly I see him in session courts, and then I see him in high court for drug trafficking. That's when I realized that our drug laws and drug policy are not working. And when the prison populations is, the highest prison population is drug related offender, that's when I think we need to do something.
Right, okay. And Dr. Rusti, help us understand your journey. You're a psychiatrist of the many kinds of conditions that you've probably treated. Why have you come to lead this centre? And in fact, when was the Centre for Addiction Science Studies even established in University of Malaya?
We established in year 2009. At that time, we started at the bungalow left by the UM staff. So that's we started what we call the methadone program there. So from there, in year 2011 and 12, we moved to Wisma R&D, University of Malaya. So that's how, you know, the objective of this center is that, to promote research, especially in the addiction field.
Okay, we'll come back to you because we're going to focus on addiction later on. Yuki, can I ask you about this? I mean, what Rusi mentioned there was very interesting. The question of methadone. Methadone, one form of drug as a replacement for a harder or more dangerous form of substance seemed to be quite effective in returning people to a normal life, right? Mm. Help us understand this reclassification campaign that you have. How would you begin this issue of reclassification?
I mean, if you have somebody, you caught somebody for using THC or cannabis, right? What is the next treatment of after that? Are you going to feed these people methadone? Because from the study, we know that methadone is much dangerous in the form of addiction. If you compare it to cannabis, you know, even nicotine is highly addictive than cannabis, you know. So I don't see, in my point of view, I don't see if you caught people with cannabis and you send them to rehab, what are you going to do with them?
Right, what is achieved when they are in fact in prison? Now we're going to take a short break and then we'll be back. Stay tuned to Let's Talk.
Hi guys, remember, life is cool without drugs. Don't forget.
Welcome back to Let's Talk. I'm Sharad Kutin. With me, Dr. Rusdi Abdul Rashid from University of Malaya's Center for Addiction Science Studies. Also, Samantha Chong, practicing lawyer, former DPP, and Ethan Mustika, or Yuki as we call her, president of the Malaysian Society for Awareness. And she, one of the things that you take up is the question of medical cannabis. Now, let's begin with you, Dr. Rusdi. Again, the center that you lead as the director, tell us about the issue of classification of drugs, because that clearly is something that's at the heart of all this.
In general, we can divide drugs into soft and so hard drugs. If you talk about soft drugs, so actually cannabis, if you ask me personally, we can consider it as soft drugs, but it's in our country it's been put into the together with hard drugs similar like heroin, amphetamine type stimulants.
Right, and what is the distinction that you would make as a medical professional between the hard and the soft? Is it about addiction? Is that what it's about?
Yes, the substance that can cause a high chance for you to get addiction, we can consider like hard drugs, as compared to substance that probably also can cause addiction, but the impact in terms of health, which is not as big as the hard drug. Hard drug, we know, you know, it can cause psychosis, for example, like in.
But in ordinary layman's terms, that psychosis is like going mad, basically.
Yeah,
is that
going mad, and you can also sometimes, as a result of a route of administration, you can go into contracted infectious disease like HIV, hepatitis B and C, and you can actually develop psychosis to the extent that you have to be admitted into the psychiatric facilities.
Right. Okay, let's hold that thought and we'll come back to, you know, what exactly is going on with somebody who gets addicted, because I understand from the little I've read that most people who take drugs aren't in fact addicted to them. That addiction levels among drug users is actually quite small, and some UN stats on that. But Samantha, help me understand this classification issue from a legal point of view. I mean, the lack of distinction between hard and soft drugs and whatever that exists, what can you tell us about it?
So the Dangerous Drug Act 1952 is actually a creature of international law. So we have three international conventions on that, and the Single Convention 1961 is the one that outlaw cannabis. But I would say the definitions is quite outdated. So you talk about genus cannabis, so there are a lot of species in terms of cannabis. There's this cannabis indica, one is sativa. So what are the chemical compounds, active compound in cannabis? Is one is CBD, one is THC. So Malaysia, we still adopt the old definitions of cannabis as per the international law. But looking at the recent scientific research, it is no longer actually relevant. So the World Health Organization's expert on drug dependence, I believe, they are the expert that see is this drug going to cause addictions or not. So they have, in last year, I think in November, they make a critical review on cannabis compound, especially CBD. Yeah. He say it has some sort of therapeutic effect, and as to the addictions rate, it is very low. Mm-hmm. So it is time for us to review the definitions, the classifications of cannabis in our law.
Right. So there's an international dimension to it, and there's a domestic dimension to the question of reclassification. Now, you know, Yuki, since your society is advocating some sort of understanding of this, what would be good? I mean, are we going to be in a situation where the government will have to say, well, if you have different types of cannabis, and then there's some cannabis we won't encourage, and there's some cannabis was fine because it's proven to have some medical effect. Is that where you want to see things go?
No, I don't think so. Because at the moment, WHO has already reclassified CBD. And actually, they're going to reclassify THC as well.
But these are the chemical substances within the plants.
Yes,
okay.
Within the plant. So, but from what we heard, that they do not have enough time to actually reclassify that THC this year. So it's going to be reclassified next year. But then each of these component is called cannabinoids, which is consists with what we have in our body. We do have an endocannabinoid system built in our body. So these endocannabinoids need cannabinoids. And cannabis, you can find cannabinoids abundantly in cannabis plant. There's a CBD with their health benefits. THC can give you some health benefits. It's very good, actually, for to curb your sickness. Like if you are in great pain, you know, people with multiple sclerosis, Parkinson, they need THC.
Okay, we'll come back to that because we want to talk about what the science telling us about medical and marijuana. Rusty, help us again, you know, with this classification system that we have now, and because the government position, especially the police, is to have a war on drugs, it has basically caught everybody in the same net,
yeah.
Right? Okay. Now, the law minister has come out to say that, you know, I'm going to quote him, the dominance of law enforcement focus on this is ineffective and has created adverse health consequences for those affected and led to huge government spending. Let's put the government spending aside. But what about health consequences? What is it, do you think, the minister is referring to when he says it's actually had adverse health consequences, this war on drugs, focus on punishing drug users?
Okay, when you have war on drugs, you normally put the users as the in the criminal justice system. You know, you do a urine testing. When the police do their urine testing, found positive for drugs, they channel the users either to ADB, Akta Dadah Berbahaya, 1952, which is you go into prisons, or they channel you into Akta Pemulihan Dadah, 1983.
Like a pusat serenti.
So they will go to pusat serenti. And what happened when they go into this institution, either prisons or pusat serenti, everybody been put there, and you know, some of the centers, they are overcrowded. You know, they are more than capacity that they are supposed to be. And when you put all these drug users in one place, their health issue is sometimes been neglect. You know, there was no proper health system actually in pusat serenti as well as in prison.
People are getting sick by going to these centers.
Yeah.
Now, may I turn to Samantha now? You know, the question of criminalization has led to, in fact, a huge criminal prison population. And we have some slides to show, in fact, these numbers. Tell us about the prison population issue that also the law minister makes mention, because he says it's led to huge government spending. And there are, of course, alternatives, aren't there?
Yes, so if you look at the stats, there's more than, I think, 56% of the prison populations are drug-related offender.
Meaning 56?
If I'm not mistaken, it's 56, and they're non-violent. So basically, they are just drug user, or they were being put there for small amount of possessions. Because drug users, like smokers, they would typically have one or two cigarettes with them. And the problem with the law is they never differentiate between drug user and dependents or addicts. Because how you, they just lump sum and put them there. Yeah. And as to prison, I think there are more than 50% of the Malaysian prisons are actually overpopulated. You can see the stat there, yes. And I think it's 33,500 out of 59,000 are drug-related offender. And our prisons are way overpopulated, especially in Pangkalan Chepau. I think the capacity 2,005, but they have 2,009.
Okay, so
the consequences you can see on the is that there are infectious diseases, for example, TB. When we talk about TB, we're not talking about just the inmates, but it's about the warden as well.
Right,
the prison
so this
officer.
Is tuberculosis. Yeah. Come back to you, Dr. Rusi, just to help us understand again, the distinction that Samantha made and what I'm reading as well is that somebody could be a drug user without being an addict. How does that work? Because the assumption is that that every drug user is an addict because drugs are addictive.
Yeah, when people start using drugs, they may be using it just for recreational purposes. They don't have problem surrounding their drug use. They got the benefit of taking drugs, the positive effect. So at that point of time, they are happily using, they got no problems. And they can control their substance use, whether it's cannabis or whatever substance. So at this point in time, their brain is not yet been affected by these drugs. But later on, when they progress, they go into what we call abuse stage. At this stage, their relationship surrounding them is already affected. Their family, their friends, and they probably start doing illegal works, illegal things.
Okay, so this this applies to both hard drugs and soft drugs,
yes.
Or only to hard drugs?
To all drugs. Only to hard drugs, I can say.
Okay, that, so what about you, Yuki? I mean, how do you see this war on drugs? I mean, who has it hurt?
It's hurt the people the most. Especially the youngster, the breadwinner of the family. Mm. I have cases where the father has gone missing for 2 days. Nobody knows where he went because supposedly he was supposed to pick up his child from the school bus. We find out that actually he has been nabbed by the AADK, and the AADK personnel actually failed to inform the family on where his whereabouts, This is a breadwinner, a man that is working, and a sole provider to the family. It's affected the family very much.
And this is a typical case, you
say? Yes, it's a typical case.
Right.
It's always happened like this. Because my concern here is, if you want to nab these people, first of all, why didn't you inform the family? Second of all, have you ever think about what's going to happen to the wife and to the children that were left out?
You're saying this is to the police. You're addressing the police and talking about this. Okay, let's take a short break. We'll be back with a deeper understanding of addiction. Stay tuned to Let's Talk. Welcome back to Let's Talk. I'm Sharad Kutin. With me, Dr. Rusti Abdul Rashid, Samantha Chong, and Yukio, aka Intan Mustika. We're talking about drug addiction and the possibility of decriminalization and changing basically our drug laws. We're trying to say where should this conversation that we've been having for decades, and we heard earlier from the Deputy Prime Minister, she said just say no to drugs. And what exactly does that mean for young people? But let's get behind the science, Rusti, the science of addiction. You had said earlier that you make a distinction between soft drugs and hard drugs, and this is also part of policy in several countries. They make a distinction between these two things. Now, but what is it when the law minister says we need to treat this as a health issue? What is it that needs to happen? What goes into place? Don't send people to prisons. Where do you send them to? If you can determine that they are in fact addicted to the substance.
Mm-hmm. Okay, when they found that, we do the urine testing and we found that this is just a user, it's not drug traffickers. They only probably have small possession of drug with them and your urine is positive. So what we should do, we should actually divert these people to have treatment in clinics or in hospital that have this addiction service. At the moment, I think we already have quite many clinics and also hospital that involve, especially the, this methadone treatment, but they also treat other drug as well. It's not just for opiates. They can treat for cannabis, they can treat for amphetamine type stimulant and other drugs as well.
Right. So, and I think in countries like Portugal, they also instituted, when they, in fact, legalized most drugs and drug taking, they also created clinics for people to go. So who goes to this clinic? Does it require the government to recognize that some people take drugs recreationally and it has no consequence for society, for their family, for their jobs? And then there's some people who take drugs and are negatively affected by it, and it in fact has consequences both personally and socially.
So what we should do, we should refer them to what we call medical board or dissociation board. So this board consists of medical doctor or health personnel, social welfare, and maybe counselors by AADK. So this board will decide whether the users is in the category of what we call recreational use or abuse stage, or even dependent state. So dependent state is the most severe form of addiction stage, whereby they already unable to control their substance use. Their brain already damaged. So by definition, dependent is when you already develop tolerance, you use for 1 year regularly, you have withdrawal when you stop, and your life affected by illegal activities, you lost also a good relationship with your family. So there is actually many criteria, and it must actually last for at least 1 year regular use of
drugs. Right. So you're saying we need to have the capacity to make these distinctions, and it could be something like a board that determines individuals. I wanted to Samantha on this. You know, the very interesting about the laws in Malaysia is that you're caught in possession, you're presumed to be a user. You're a user, you're definitely an addict, and if you have enough drugs on you, you're presumed to be a trafficker. I mean, that seems how, correct me if I'm wrong, that's how the law seems to operate in Malaysia. It doesn't make these finer distinctions that we do need to make. Help me understand, from a legal point of view, where should we place addiction?
So the law presumes that if your urine is positive, you are a drug user that is that needed to be punished. That is the biggest problem in our law, because your urine is positive doesn't mean that you are addict or dependent. It just means that you have used drug in the past maybe a few months, so you might not be under the influence. So a lot of people doesn't understand what is addictions. And if you read the UNODC, the United Nations Office on Crime and Drugs, is it World Drugs Report, they say that only 1 out of 10 drug users are drug dependent. And there's world stats. And only 1 out of 6 person that need treatments get treatment. So okay. 1 out of 10. Not everybody become dependent. I'm not trying to advocate for drug use, but we need to acknowledge that there are scientific research to that, and it is not just to punish them, but looking at Portugal, a lot of people think, oh, Portugal is a very Western country, but Portugal is actually a very conservative Catholic country. So back then, they have the highest overdose rate, and a lot of people are in drugs. And what they did is they divert people from convictions to a treatment, to a program to see if you need treatment, because some people doesn't need treatment.
Yeah. Right. In fact, I've got some interesting stats also, not just Portugal, but also in Switzerland.
Yes.
They had quite an interesting effect when they changed their drug policy law. There were 55% fewer vehicle thefts, 88% fewer muggings and burglaries committed by people who are addicted to drugs. And also HIV infection due to drug use fell from 85% in 1985 to 5% in 2009. So these are quite impressive stats. Okay, let's go back to the question of addiction. You're saying people should be allowed to use cannabis products which have a medical use. Can you get addicted to cannabis, Yuki?
I read a lot and I met a lot of people. Most of them are not addicted to cannabis. When it's there, it's there. When it's not there, then it's not there. You're not going to get a physical dependent, you know, you shaking without cannabis, I need to have cannabis. No, that won't happen.
You might probably have psychological dependence.
But psychological dependence, yes. Yeah. And how they replace it normally is by replacing it with cigarette, the nicotine.
Right.
So the way we have to educate people, the way you use drugs is important as well. You know, not just you want to try, But you try responsibly. You have responsibility there to take care of your body, to take care of your mind.
Right, and I want to stop you there because we come back to this very interesting distinctions we make between hard and soft drugs. Because in some of the little bit of research that I did, actually nicotine is classified under hard drugs, which is completely legal in Malaysia.
Yeah.
I mean, so how do we? So what are we saying? I mean, should we then? Is it a situation saying, well, all hard drugs, including alcohol, should be criminalized or made or banned, and soft drugs then legalized? Well, what's your position on it, Dr. Rizzi?
I think, in my opinion, if you ban, you know, like cannabis, you know, we have done it with cannabis. In the past, I think many people, during the hippies time, you know, they take cannabis a lot. And at that point of time, heroin is not a problem yet. But once we put the cannabis, you know, into our ADB, so many of these...
this is the list of prescribed
cannabis
drugs.
Cannabis users go and take heroin after that, even harder drugs.
Because the cannabis is not there, it's so not accessible.
I didn't believe with the... They said a gate theory, you know.
Until now, it's
still a theory. Nobody has proved it.
Yeah.
Right. So you're an expert in addiction. You're saying that the idea that, you know, legalizing marijuana, whether for medical use or recreational use, isn't necessarily going to lead to an upsurge in people, not just taking drugs, but taking harder drugs and much more kind of addictive substances. Yeah.
If I may, if you look at Portugal, when they stop arresting people for drug use, they refer them to treatment, they refer them to counselling, they actually see a reduce on drug use. There's no going up. But, the overdose rate is the lowest now, as per. And if you look at alcohol banning, in 1920s, the American, the US, they banned alcohol. Yeah. What happened? A lot of fake alcohol. People die from it. They have liver cancer and people gone blind. So total prohibition doesn't work.
Yeah.
And under international law, medical cannabis is allowable if it's for medical purposes.
You know what I found fascinating in what I'm reading is that Switzerland actually provided clean drugs, right? So that's an interesting, because what we do when we criminalize is that we don't get rid of the desire for things or even the supply of those illegal things. Mm. It just moves into an unregulated space where criminals can determine pricing, quality, and so on and so forth. And then we have a situation where people don't get treated either.
Indeed, World Drug Reports published by the UNODC say that last year, the productions of illicit drug is the highest in history. And the heroin price in Europe has dropped significantly.
Okay, what we're going to come back to, and I want to ask you guys, if you are honest with me, I mean, why, given all this evidence, and I know there's still a huge conversation, we don't have people here pushing back on us because we've had 60 years of people pushing back on this, why is there resistance to what the science is telling us about the situation in drugs? Okay, we're going to take a short break and we'll be back. Stay tuned to Let's Talk. Hi, welcome back to Let's Talk. I'm Sharad Kutin. With me, Dr. Rusti Abdul Rashid, Samantha Chong, and Yukio Intan Mustika. All of them involved in a discussion, we're all involved in a discussion about our national drug policy and whether it's time for a change, because the law minister has said as much with his suggestion that we need to move the issue of drug addiction from a police matter to a medical or health matter. And that's something that he said only yesterday. Now, recently, the death sentence imposed on a 29-year-old Mohammad Lokman for distributing cannabis or pricked the conscience. Remember, it pricked the conscience of the country. In fact, many people internationally also were quite surprised, including the famous Indian writer and diplomat Sasi Tharoor. PKR politician Nurul Izzah Anwar took up the cause, saying she's going to be looking for eventually decriminalizing the use of cannabis oil for medical reasons. Now, the word decriminalizing is an interesting one. Samantha, help us understand, what is decriminalizing? What is legalizing? How do we understand the distinctions?
So decriminalization is that it is still an offense, but there's no criminal punishment. It is more to administrative, just like a traffic summons. And in terms of drug policy, you stopped arresting people for drug use and small amount of possessions. You divert them to see if they need treatments or counseling. So legalizations is you have set regulations to regulate the plantation, perhaps the productions, the sales of certain drugs. So it's a huge distinction.
Okay, and that's very important because recently I think Thailand has said that it was going to move towards legalization. They're going to be part of what is, I guess, a global industry. Canada is doing it, seeing billions potentially from the production of cannabis oil and products related to those, class of plants and herbs. I want to ask you, Rusty, you're a psychiatrist. I don't know if you look at society's pushback, the resistance to change. Is it because of 60 years of demonizing drug use that we're not using evidence-based discussions when we talk about drug policy in this country?
I think number one is because the task of treating drug addicts in our country for many years is actually not fall under the responsibility of the doctors. It's actually put under KDN. KDN, they
is
are not doctors.
The Home Ministry.
Yeah, Home Ministry. They look the drug issue from the security point of view. They never probably seen as from the health perspective. And in actual fact, I remember reading some articles, many, many years ago, addiction been put under health. But at that point of time, there was no medication, there was no adequate knowledge how to treat drug addiction using health approach. And then after that, the drug case was being passed to the social welfare. And similarly, during that point of time, the safety, security concern has been raised up and subsequently was been given to KDN.
Right, and the security concern is always saying that drug addicts or drug users are addicts, and addicts become criminals because they need to find money for their addiction.
Yeah.
Is that the way that people think about it?
Yeah. Until the year early 2000s, we start seeing a rising HIV prevalence among IDUs, intravenous drug users. Then only we realize that actually drugs is... it's a health issues, not only HIV, hepatitis B, hepatitis C, then after that TB, which is nearly every decade at one time in our country, now start emerging back. So then only we start to realize. And WHO at that point of time, I think in year 2002, said that the prevalence of HIV in our country is so high among drug addicts. And because of this, we're not able to achieve the one of the MDG, Millennium Development Goal, which is number 6. They have 8 to fulfill. We fulfill all, but MDG 6, to treat the HIV in our country, we're not yet. So that's why.
But in terms of policy, do you think it's been rather pragmatic, that the previous administration as well, fairly pragmatic, and it had that methadone, if you're on opioids, you get shifted to methadone. I understand that's a much better thing, right?
If I may, you see, our law actually criminalized, punish people who use drugs. We did it before. I mean, you look at the effective of a rehab center, the Pusat Serenti, you lock people up, let them go turkey. There are research done by UNC Malaya that 50% of those people relapse back to drug use within 51 days. And back in 2015, the government, they did convert all this some of the Pusat Serenti to clinic cure and care. They open up, free access is for voluntary treatments. So if you're addicted to heroin, they'll give you methadone. So it will cover the receptor and you can have a stable lifestyle, you can work.
So already there was a level of understanding within government about what is more effective, right?
Yes.
So we saw that. Okay. So what more, Yuki, what more can government do? I mean, at this point in time, because medical marijuana is not available, is that the next stage?
Well, government have to do something. First of all, the stigma surrounding the medical marijuana itself, you need to be open up to research. You need to do like AADK or this.
This is Agency Anti-Dada Kebangsaan.
Yeah.
Okay.
I mean, it's good that they are there to prevent drug use, you know, but you can't prevent people if they want to do drugs. You know, if they want to do drugs, they will do drugs. And in a subject of cannabis, I hope that AADK would be more truthful in their advertisement. You know, when they talk about cannabis, they need to inform people that cannabis is a plant, because most of people doesn't know that.
It's not a monster.
It's not a monster, and it can use if you use it rightfully, you know, the right way, it can help your health. You have to give the knowledge. If you not giving the knowledge to the people and you give the wrong perception, you know, then there's no purpose of AADK there.
Okay, so coming back to you, Dr. Rusi, I mean, what's your position on a medical use of things like cannabis oil and such, which is now criminal, right?
Yeah, I think that we should support medical cannabis or medical marijuana.
Yeah.
You know, we know some of the research that we carry out. Even FDA already approved some of these indication to use CBD.
Okay, give us an example.
Example for the one that been approved to treat nausea and vomiting due to chemotherapy.
Okay, so people with cancers who chemotherapy.
Even for severe epilepsy, already FDA approved.
Yeah. And so are there no substitutes? I mean, do we need to go to cannabis to get an effective, you know, drug response to these conditions?
Like, for example, you know, for chemotherapy side effect, you know, we give some of these countries, they allow to use cannabis, because cannabis, if you use for those people with chemotherapy medication, it's very effective to reduce their vomiting.
Okay, and it's very effective. So it's proven effectiveness.
Yeah, yeah.
Samantha, how do you see this? I mean, what exactly is the problem for something like medical marijuana? Do we go back again to the classification issue?
I think the normal excuse given by those who are against it is that there's no local research being done. Mm-hmm. But there cannot be research when you don't give permissions to conduct research. Yeah. So it's like very conflicting. Yeah.
Right, yeah. Okay. Oh, but it's scientific research, right? I mean, anywhere, if you conduct a research on cancer, for instance, and the use of cannabis in the United States or in, I don't know, in Kenya, does it really make a difference, doctor?
For me, no difference. You know, I think we can use their data as well. But something about our country, they want local data.
Yeah. And the problem here is, unlike methadone, you know, cannabis come from a different strains. Means that you need to study the cannabis from the strains itself. You know, you develop the strains and then you differentiate it into hemp, indica, sativa, and that's when the study goes. You know, unlike methadone, you bring the substance methadone and then you do a clinical trial and that's it. It can be done like that. But in this country, it is impossible for us to grow cannabis, even to study it.
Okay, tell us, Samantha, what happens if you grow cannabis?
Natural life in prison and at least six stroke vaping, it means that you die in prison.
Yeah. Okay, so that's what...
Even if it's just one tiny plant, natural life imprisonment.
Okay, so that's the state of the law, at least. Okay, we're taking a short break and we'll be back. We're talking about reform of drug policy in the country. Stay tuned. Hi, welcome back to Let's Talk. I'm Sharad Kutin. With me, Dr. Rusi Abdul Rashid from University of Malaya's Center for Addiction Science Studies. Also, Samantha Chong. She's an advocate and solicitor, former DPP. And Intan Mustika, a.k.a. Yuki, who's president of the Malaysia Society for Awareness. And awareness of cannabis, or medical cannabis, I think, to be more precise. Now, we're in the last stretch when we want to talk about drug law reform. But let's Let's again come back to some of the arguments being made, right? And the law minister already suggested one of the arguments is an argument about cost. Prisons, ineffective, and also hugely costly. We have some stats here. Perhaps, Samantha, you can talk us through some of the stats that we see here on our screen, if we can bring them up. What are we learning about the cost of actually housing people who probably are not only going to benefit, are going to actually be harmed by being in prison?
So first, we talk about random urine testing. So in 2016, there's about 136,000 people being randomly tested. We spending on test strip and enforcement itself is 112.9 million ringgit Malaysia. And that is even, I mean, urine positive doesn't mean they're the addict that needs help. So in terms of prison, one day we spent about 2.1 million feeding people in prison. And that translates to 42 ringgit a day. And it will be more in the case of prison certainty. So roughly a month, we spend about 3,500 per person for prison certainty. And it is scientifically proven. It is not effective. Even the UN agency, UNODC, they have recommended that countries to replace compulsory drug detention center.
Okay, what's interesting is that, you know, it sounds like we're spending a lot of money, but, you know, going back to what you said, Rusty, earlier, we're clearly not spending even enough because there's no health facilities, people are getting sicker or their health is deteriorating in those facilities. Mm-hmm. So, okay, and it comes to the next step. We heard the law minister already say there's a change in thinking, at least at his level, because we don't know what the police think, we don't know what, you know, the bureaucrats are thinking, civil servants are thinking, and so on and so forth, right? Maybe the medical establishment in Malaysia, where does it stand on these issues? Would they be wholeheartedly supporting the government if they say, you know, we need a change? Mm-hmm. But Rusty, tell us, if we take, the government takes the lead on this, what needs to happen? Should we just close down the Pusat Serenity tomorrow? Should we release everybody from prison? How do we do it in a way that that could be orderly and managed well?
Okay, I think after we change the law, we put the law so that it can actually facilitate the treatment of addiction through health facilities. I think...
Do we have enough people? Do we have enough psychiatrists, psychologists, counselors?
From the perspective of health side, I think we are ready. You know, we have from the methadone program itself, we have about almost 1,000 methadone clinic in Malaysia at the moment. And at the same time, you know...
1,000? Did you say 1,000 methadone?
Yeah. That's private and public.
Private and public. Okay. That consists private and public. And most of our doctors, and in fact, at undergraduate levels, they're already exposed with this treating addictions using a medical approach. During my time, there was not, you know. But now we already started to teach our medical students before they graduate, become a houseman. They already know this, you know.
Right. So there is a bit. There's enough of an ecosystem to deal with a change in approach.
Yes, I think we need to increase the capacity building as well. Not only the doctors, even the supporting staff, including nurses, social worker, the counselors, and we need to put new position, what we call case managers. To manage this, because this case manager we also involved in our dissociation committee just now that I mentioned. So they are the one who actually interview direct to the patient and report to the dissociation board. So from that we decide, you know, this patient should go for treatment in the hospital, or this patient should go only for probably, you know, fines. Yeah?
Right. Okay. So that's the thing.
So it has been done before. Actually, we have been in 2015 they converted Pusat Serenity to open concept voluntary evidence based treatment.
So we don't have any Pusat Serenity now.
We have 28 Pusat Serenity, I guess, but they convert some of them. The first one in Sungai Besi into voluntary treatment. So from 30 security guards, they only have 3 security guards to take care of people because you no longer need to afraid that they will run away. And first thing I think we need to do is to educate people about what is addictions. Addictions is not that is enough to say no, because drugs, they alter your brain functions. You can't make a rational decision. So they need medical treatments on that. It is, you can't just lock them out. like Amy Winehouse's song on rehab. They try to put me on rehab. I say, no, no, no.
Okay, right.
Yeah, they don't want to go through that hell, yeah.
And then she, of course, is an example of how the tragedy that can come from addiction. But again, yeah. Addiction different from using and different, again, from the drugs. Yuki, help us see what you would like to see happen. What kind of steps do you think the government needs to take? Government on one side, but also society. Because you mentioned stigma, that's not going to go away.
Yeah.
I mean, the law minister can say what he wants.
Yeah.
There are a lot of parents out there who probably think very differently about what should be done.
Yeah, because once your child or your son or your daughter been caught by ADK and been sent to court, you know, for hearing, of course, you first of all, as a family, you'll be like ashamed. And you don't want to say, mengaku anak, you know, you are not my son, you're not in my family anymore. You know, that is, I think, the bad thing, the most bad thing that you can done to drug user. You know, I think a social program might help them, you know. Parents should know what their children are using. You know, if they are using cannabis, do you observe any changes in their behavior? This is my normal questions that I asking parents. You know, when parents come to see me and say, I'm shocked, my son has been caught for cannabis. So my first question will be, don't you aware of any changes? And they are not aware. There's no changes in anything, no changes in attitude. The children still giving money, you know. It's just that once they get caught and sent to court for hearing, you know, that is making their parents ashamed, you know, because you have to go to the court.
Right, and not just parents, maybe even employers, right?
Yeah.
Who would attitudes would change. Samantha, okay, I want to ask you this. Since you're a lawyer and you're part of the criminal legal justice system, police, do you think the police are ready for a change?
They did it before in Bursa, actually. So police arrested some drug users, they put them in lockups. Of course, they can go on for remand and continue 14 days just detention. But there's research done. The police refer the drug user to somebody else to see whether this person is an addict or need treatments. And if you want to go to that program, we'll release you. In Bursa, it has been done before, and the result is awesome. It's good. So we just want to...
So you think there are elements of the police force who are open to this idea?
Yes, yes. They arrest. If you don't go to that program, we will activate the file and we will charge you. So they still hold them accountable. So the concept here is replacing convictions for health referral. We are stressing on the health issue because addiction is just not that. It's okay just to say no, but it changed everything.
Okay, yeah. So those will be the addicts. What if you go into this referral system and you're found to be just a recreational drug user? What happens to you then?
Then you must be well informed that if you have problem with drug use, you know where to go to. Most Malaysians doesn't know that we have free government clinic that provide methadone maintenance treatments. So this is something.
So that's if you're something like heroin.
Yes.
Right, okay.
But you can get psychosocial counselling as well. I would respectfully disagree with my friend here that AADK need to be abolished. Mm-hmm. But I think there's a confuse between the function of AADK. On one hand, they're going to arrest people and put them in possessivity. On one hand, they're going to give you counselling. So I think AADK, they did a good job in counselling. They should continue to do that because in ATS, the stimulant, the hard drugs, the new drugs, counselling is important. And that is where AADK can come into their role, but they need to stop knocking on people's door and arrest people.
Right. Okay. So, and this brings us back to a very interesting, the question, Rusty, about addiction. Mm. We get addicted to all kinds of things.
Yeah.
People are addicted to sugar. Yeah. People are addicted to their phones. Coffee. People are addicted. Right. So how should, as a society, do we manage addiction? I mean, what should we do it? Through our education system, should we do it in regulating what can be sold to people?
I think the most important thing is primary prevention. The right primary prevention. At the moment, I think how the government is doing it, they try to frighten the public with these drug issues.
All right, they frighten them. Fear
technique, you know. Fear technique does not really put people to come forward for treatment. You know, it create more stigma around them. So I think we need to change a more pragmatic approach, more friendly approach, more kasih sayang approach.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so caring, friendly, evidence-based, the real science, not, monsters and such. Okay, and and also legislative change. We need that. How extensive, Samantha, you know, in the minute that we have left, how extensive will the legislative change be? How many laws are we looking at in order to change the system, to actually reform drug policy?
So we are basically looking at two laws, the Dangerous Drug Act 1952 that criminalized drug use and possessions, and the Drug Dependence Treatment and Rehabilitation 1983. So the second law that I mentioned is actually under the Home Ministry. It has been dealt as a security issue. I mean, it is like a no-brainer. Treatment and rehabilitations, but it's by the police and security issues or ADK. It doesn't make sense. So it's time that we shift to a health approach, like what was said by the lower ministers.
Okay, so just two laws, and that's low-hanging fruit. Yeah. It's something that can be achieved very easily, you think?
So, I mean, even without changing the law, we have a criminal procedure code that allow the magistrates to discharge the accused person and to give them to a bond with conditions. I will see maybe a conditions to go to a treatment or program that see whether you need treatment. So under our law, we can.
So but there's still discretion in the court.
Yes, but as long as there's this punitive law there, if we have police or ADK arresting people outside methadone clinic, it's not going to work.
Is that what's happening?
It is happening.
Ah, okay, and that's maybe another show because we've run out of time. Thank you so much, all of you. It's been wonderful. I've learned so much listening to this discussion about the national drug policy and how it must be reformed. I've been speaking to Dr. Rusdi Abdul Rashid, Director of University of Malaya Center for Addiction Studies, Addiction Science Studies. Also, Intan Mustika Putri Mokhtar, President of the Malaysian Society for Awareness. And Samantha Chong, Advocate and Solicitor, former Deputy Public Prosecutor. We've been talking about drugs. This is Let's Talk. I'm Sharad Kutan, only on Astro 180.